Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Coming up this morning here on the show in 20 minutes, John Feinstein joins us. Longtime sports author, also contributor to the Washington Post, longtime golf writer. On the impact of Phil Mickelson's victory over the weekend, the oldest golfer ever to win a major at 50 years old, nearly 51. What does it mean for his legacy and the rest of his career? Also in 40 minutes, Canadian bacon. The night in the Stanley Cup playoffs as Mraz gives us the nightly action around the ice, and that includes a dramatic double overtime victory by the New York Islanders, meaning that the one and only upside-down Mike had reason to climb into his car last night, roll up the windows, and sit in his driveway screaming into his phone because he couldn't do it with his sleeping wife upstairs, so he had to do it in his car to send us the audio of him celebrating the Islanders taking a 3-2 series lead.
Ilya Sorokin is a damn wall!
A GD wall! Having a good time!
Let's go, Islanders!
Isles were down 2-1. Having lost 2 in a row, they had taken game number 1. Upside down Mike set the world aflame. Lost 2, quiet. Crickets. What happened to Upside Down Mike? They needed a game 4 victory. Huge way. Go down 3-1, you're toast. Not only did they get a game 4 victory to knock things up at 2 games apiece, but then a crucial game 5 win in double overtime last night. And once again, Mike's having a good time.
Having a good time!
And we have learned today that this Queen song that he is singing and citing and playing behind him for all of these rowdy videos is not an Islanders signature song. I thought all along that they were playing this at the arena or something like this. Mraz insists that this is just something that he's been doing on his own since the season began. This is his own personal good luck song, celebration song. So he's having a good time this morning. Maybe not if he has got to wake up for work. I'm not sure. What does Upside Down Mike do for a living?
He's a contractor of sorts in some union building something in New York City or wherever. He's a handyman, basically.
Well, so you don't really know. He does something in some union in New York City or something.
Sounds right.
Well, I don't know his exact, you know, some people are, what do you call them, iron workers, some people are steam fitters. I don't know exactly what he does, but he does construction work somewhere because I trusted him to do stuff on my house at one point in time, unless he lied to me, in which case he's still really good at housework.
Those union guys got to get up early for their jobs. So if he was having a few too many pops last night watching the Islanders, it was double overtime, so went deep into the night, and then had to wake up for one of those union jobs. That's a rough morning for him.
Yeah, and he texted me at 4:30 in the morning saying he had posted a video, what a win, and he had gone to bed at 1:30 at night. So it's a three-hour sleep following screaming and yelling into, I think he's working on Hudson Yards today, I think. So there's a lot happening.
If you were wondering why all of those union guys would ride the Long Island Railroad with you, and they would be asleep, snoring next to you as you went in, and then drinking beers on the way back, and then sleeping and snoring as well. That's why, because they're routinely, you know, working on 3 hours of sleep and working off a hangover after watching the Islanders last night.
That sums it up. That sums it up.
Double OT, game six, on the island.
And by the way, the name of the Islanders song that they use is Right Back Where We Started From, the Slapshot song.
But that's the Islanders song. That's not the Queen song that he uses.
Right. So that's good time. I'm just doubly confirming that Queen song is not an Islanders song. That is the Islanders song, is that other one, the Slapshot song.
Okay. So more on that with Canadian Bacon coming up here in about 35 minutes from now. Last night, the Milwaukee Bucks had to rebound after a really poor shooting night in game number one. And remember, they needed a buzzer beater to beat the Heat in game number one. And had that tipped the other way, had the Heat won that game number one, it was going to be true egg on the face of the Bucks. Milwaukee had said their front office, their owner, you know what? We wanted revenge for last year. The Heat eliminating the Bucks when the Bucks were the number one seed. The second consecutive season, the number one seed out of the East for the Bucks had flamed out in the playoffs before the NBA Finals. The Heat last year went on that run. The Heat were the best story in the bubble, one of the best stories of the bubble, all the way to a plucky NBA Finals that ultimately ended in defeat to the Los Angeles Lakers, but boy, it was fun to watch Jimmy Butler and company in that. Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, and that Heat run of the bubble was just phenomenal. And so the Bucks this year didn't end up getting the one seed, that was the Sixers. Didn't end up getting the two seed, that was the Nets. And yet, even their owner said, it's fine. We wanted the Heat. We wanted revenge. And that felt like it could absolutely get sideways on them. If you lose a game early in the series, the pressure is on you now suddenly, and everybody goes, oh, see, the Bucks are going to flame out again in the playoffs. And there it is, a nip and tuck game number one. The Bucks are not shooting good at all, and suddenly they're on the precipice of losing a game one to an undermanned team that beat them last year at home. And they get the overtime victory on the late shot, and that seems to stabilize them. Because last night, the way that they shot was truly unbelievable. They hit 10 three-pointers in the first quarter, the most ever an NBA record, and made a 26-point mountain in front of the Heat in the first quarter last night. It was over. It was absolutely over. 10 three-pointers in the first quarter and a 26-point lead last night. It was 46-20 after one. The Bucks had 46 points after 12 minutes. Giannis was dominant, but everybody was dominant for the Bucks last night. Giannis had 31, 13 rebounds, and 6 assists. Chris Middleton had 17 points and had 3 of those 3-pointers. Drew Holiday had 11 points, had 1 of those 3-pointers, and then off the bench, Connaughton had 5 threes, Forbes had 6 threes, Portishead, two threes. Even P.J. Tucker got one. I mean, everybody had a three last night for the Bucks, and they shot the lights out and absolutely ran roughshod over the Heat. It was never a game, 132-98. And last night was the game the Bucks really needed. They really needed a flex on the Heat type of game because, again, game one was too close for comfort. 109-107 in overtime. The Chris Middleton bucket was absolutely enormous, really at the buzzer, essentially. And the Bucks can't afford for this to be an emotional grind-out long series because they've potentially got the Nets staring at them in the 2-3 matchup of the second round. Okay, that 2-3 hole instead of the 1, the 2-3 seeding was vital, or crucial rather, in the Eastern Conference. Because you would either get, as the 1, the Knicks or the Hawks of the second round, or the Nets or the Bucks. And for the Bucks, that means it's going to be the Nets. And so they just can't afford for this to be a long series. They can't afford for this to be an emotional series. They can't afford this for this to be a series where they've got to chase games. They've got to put the foot on the throat of a team that they are better than. And in game one, it almost got away from them. They survived. They got the W. But then last night was a this is how great we can be game. So I thought that was very important for the Bucks to have a breather after game one to open up the 2-0 series lead. Now you got to get the split. You got to get one out of these next two. Come back to Milwaukee to close in game five. If you get the sweep, great. I would imagine the Heat get one of these two. You need one of the two. Split, come back, Milwaukee, game five, series over, and then you rest up because it's not going to be a long series for the Nets. They win that in four or five as well. And honestly, as long as the Nets are focused, it should be a sweep. The Celtics are nowhere close to the talent level, the execution level of the Nets on their best day. Nowhere close. So this should be a short Nets series. The Bucks have a lot of pressure. And I know that they would say the opposite. Hey, nobody believes in us. We're not the one seed this year. It's all about the Sixers. All about the Nets. We're under the radar. But ultimately, that's not true because if you keep getting to the second round and losing with Giannis, it keeps building the frustration. At the very least, it needs to be a long series against the Nets. It's got to be a game seven against the Nets. So dispatching with the Heat as soon as possible and demoralizing them a little bit because the Heat have been spinning their wheels all season long, never been healthy, never got quite right, didn't have Jimmy Butler for so long. You don't want to give them any life because the Heat are the type of team that'll take that and draw on last year. So good job last night for the Bucks just burying them in the first half, in the first quarter, and never making it a game. They got their revenge so far through two games, got two more. Elsewhere in Wisconsin, Aaron Rodgers had his appearance last night on SportsCenter for Kenny Mayne's final episode. Now, he and Kenny Mayne have had a relationship for a while. Mayne has done some interviews and profiles on him, so they've had a relationship, seemingly a friendship. So as a favor for Kenny Mayne's final game, or final episode rather, Aaron Rodgers was going to come on. And Rodgers did open up a little bit about the rift between him and the Packers. He started to get really vague, and Mayne kind of roped him in. Did you demand a trade? He didn't really get that specific about that part. But if you were reading and tracking what Rodgers was saying, it was that he feels Brian Gutekunst is hiding behind the structure, the organization, and the history of the Packers franchise. That's what Aaron Rodgers illuminated last night. Because he said, you know, an organization is not about the building or about the history. It's about the people. It's about the people. It's about the relationships. It's about the people. And what you could very clearly see here is Gutekunst was trying to act out something that had happened between Favre and Rodgers a second time around. That in the 90s and 2000s, the Packers somehow struck gold twice, going from Hall of Fame QB to Hall of Fame QB. And it wasn't seamless, but the success was. There was animosity, there was frustration, there was discomfort, but the success was pretty seamless. I mean, Brett Favre's final game, they're at home in the NFC Championship game. Then Aaron Rodgers takes over. And a couple of years later, they win the Super Bowl. Pretty nice transition. Gutekunst was trying to do the same thing. He was trying to replicate that. And by drafting Jordan Love and by not expressing the bridge that they wanted with Aaron Rodgers to get to where they wanted to go, Rodgers took it personally. And Rodgers won't let it go. And not only was it that, that to me was the spark that lit the inferno, but it was also the other little things that seemingly Gutekunst also didn't listen to Aaron Rodgers about. And so Rodgers took all of this personally. And what Rodgers is saying is, this isn't business, this is personal. That's what he said last night. Now, I'm not sure I agree. I would love for my bosses to be warm and friendly relationship types. I have not always had that. And when I've got bent out of shape about that, I've also had to learn some hard lessons. Sometimes it's not personal. Sometimes it's just business. And what Rodgers was talking about last night was he wants the personal touch, the people. That this isn't just a business. It's not just getting from one quarterback to another quarterback. He expects more respect. He expects more friendship. He expects more of a relationship. It's about the people, he said a number of times. The people, the people, the people. And what he's saying is, Brian Gutekunst didn't develop a relationship with me in terms of that trust or that personal relationship because I deserve that. And that the people, the relationships, that's what builds the Packers, or that's what builds a winner. It's not just that they have a helmet that Vince Lombardi once won 5 championships with. So, it leads us to, can you repair the personal with Aaron Rodgers? That's can you, because Rodgers is a stickler. He's a get away from me buddy type of guy. And maybe that's unfixable. Number two, should you? Because again, it's not business then. If it's just about business, the Packers are just doing business. We drafted your replacement. We're waiting to start that replacement. Rodgers wants the personal. It sounds like the Packers are trying to walk back their mistake. But that's what it's come down to. The Packers tried to do business as business had been done before in Packerland. Rodgers took it personally and is holding it personally. And now you got to make a decision. If you're the Packers, how do you want to handle it? When we come back, John Feinstein on Phil Mickelson's historic victory. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings on CBS Sports Radio.
My buddies had their own balls. That was a big deal. I was like, oh, yeah, those are nice.
Yeah.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We appreciate you being with us on this fine Tuesday morning. So glad you're with us. Remember, you can listen to us across the CBS Sports Radio network and also on Sirius XM Channel 206 every single morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. Our next guest is a long time sports writer, author of 43 different books. Also, longtime golf writer as well, an observer of the sport of the game. Joining us here on the show, also a member of the CBS family, John Feinstein. John, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, DA. I am a little groggy because I stayed up way past my usual bedtime to watch the Islanders last night, but pretty damn happy with the way the game came out.
Your Islanders with a double overtime victory. to make sure nobody woke up in your house? Were you going outside to your car and yelling inside the car in the driveway?
I closed all the doors because my wife and daughter were both asleep. And it's funny you say that because quickly, when I was trying to decide 100 years ago if I wanted to pursue writing sports for a living or writing politics for a living, when I was young at the Washington Post, I was driving home on a November night from somewhere, and I picked up the Islanders on WOR radio. John Sterling was the play-by-play guy. This is how long ago this was. And I sat in my car with my ear to the radio listening to the last 5 minutes of the game. And as I got out of the car, I said to myself, what the hell were you just doing? And I said, anybody who's crazy enough to sit and listen in a car to a November hockey game because he wants to know the outcome so badly is a sports writer. And it was at that moment I decided to become a sports writer, to be
That's
honest.
That's awesome.
And so the Islanders have played a major role in my life.
And you know, John, you really should go into sports writing. I'm glad that you did, as the Islanders lead 2-1 going into the second period intermission. John Feinstein joins us
this
morning.
Was that supposed to be Sterling?
That was my Sterling. Sorry. Not so good. It's better when I bring up Susan. I think it would have landed easier.
Roger Clemens is in George's box.
Of all the dramatic things, John.
I've never seen anything like this. You know, the funny story about that, I know we want to get to Mickelson, but that was in 2007. I was working on a book on Mike Messina and Tom Glavin. And the next Saturday, I was walking up the ramp at Shea Stadium. The Mets were playing the Yankees. And Susan, who's a wonderful person, had Chris Russo pinned against the wall because Russo and Francesa had replayed that moment about 1,000 times that week. And I heard Russo saying, Susan, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? It happened. And Susan was not happy. She probably isn't happy with me right now, wherever she might be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. Over the weekend, Phil does the impossible for us as a golf historian such as yourself. Put this into some type of context historically in the sport.
Well, it's one of the, you said the impossible, it's one of the great upsets in golf history. It's up there with Nicklaus winning the Masters at 46 by shooting 30 on the back nine on Sunday at Augusta, with Woods winning the Masters in 2019 after he hadn't won a major for 11 years. And to put it in a different kind of perspective, think about this. Julius Boris held the record for the oldest man to win a major for almost 53 years. He won the PGA in 1968 when he was 48. Before Boris did that, the oldest man to win a major was old Tom Morris, who won the British Open in 1867.
Oh, my God.
So we're talking, golf's been around for, 160 years. With the first British Open was played in 1860. So you're talking about a record that has now been broken twice in 160 years. And Phil broke it by a pretty wide margin since he's almost 51. So remarkable achievement. And people will say, well, nobody made a run at him on Sunday. It was a hard golf course. Brooks Koepka struggled on the par fives. That's part of championship golf. And Mickelson hit the shots he had to hit on back nine when he had to. And all credit to him. He's been written off by many people many times in his career, dating back to not winning a major until he was almost 34. And here he is almost 51 when, most of us thought he was going to be a really good player on the over 50 tour. And he has won twice on the over 50 tour, by the way. And he comes along and wins the PGA. Remarkable achievement.
Is it different than the Tiger Masters from a couple of years ago because there was this incessant waiting for Tiger to finally get back into the winning column? Eventually, he'll get a major. It kind of felt like there was this slow boil of Tiger's going to turn the corner at some point. Even if he didn't, that was the expectation. And yet it felt like almost everybody just had left Mickelson's career for dead, and that was it. Was this more unlikely in that way?
In that way, it was. I mean, Tiger was younger, obviously, than Mickelson was when he won that Masters. He was only 43. But the other thing was he had shown signs. He had won the Tour Championship in the fall of 2018, which some people at the time labeled the greatest comeback in the history of sports, which may have been the dumbest thing ever said on television. I won't name the person who said it because I happen to like him. But you could see signs that this might happen, that he might win another major. And he was Tiger Woods. Phil Mickelson's a great player. He's one of the 15 greatest players of all time. Tiger Woods is the greatest player of all time. All due respect to Jack Nicklaus, who I know won more majors than he did, but when Tiger was at his dominant best, he did things no one, including Nicklaus, ever did. And Nicklaus would be the first one to tell you that. So it was different. People went crazy when Tiger won, because, as you said, there was this anticipation, would he win a major? And it was the other thing that happened was the next day people started speculating on whether he could catch Nicklaus with the 18 majors. That was Tiger's 15th. But you're right. I mean, Phil missed a cut the last three PGA championships. He's not even ranked, was not even ranked in the top 100 in the world going into the PGA, and was in the field because he's a past PGA champion, having won in 2005, and needed a special exemption before this to get into this year's U.S. Open. So it was like, yeah, we love Phil. It's great to see him. Maybe he'll have a final bow at Torrey Pines. Now he's in the next five U.S. Opens because he won at Kiowa.
It is extraordinary. John Feinstein joins us this morning on the show, and I'm not just going to say this because you're on the show with me, but I thought your piece in the Washington Post about this victory the other day was one of the most illuminating, because you dissected the fact that Phil is such a popular person for fans and for media. You saw the gallery. It was overwhelming.
Yeah, literally.
But on the tour, that hasn't always been the case. He's grown into a fun uncle type of figure, but that wasn't always the case on the tour. What's been the discrepancy between his public persona and the one that his golfing peers have known?
Well, in his early days on tour, Phil's nickname was Eddie Haskell. You know, you remember the old Leave It to Beaver character who would say, "Hello, Mr. Cleaver, hello, Mrs. Cleaver," and then he would say to Beaver and Wally, let's go create trouble." And Phil always had some of that in him. He always said the right things in public. He's always signed more autographs than anybody since Arnold Palmer. And you know, I had players say to me, "Well, he's just doing that to market himself." I said, "You think the little kid with the autograph gives a damn why he signed it? All they know is they got Phil Mickelson's autograph, same as years ago when people got Palmer's autograph." So there was a discrepancy in terms of his public image and his private image in the locker room. And I remember, I mentioned this in the column, as you know, talking to him in 1997 before the British Open at Troon about that, because Phil is always aware of how his peers felt about him back then. And he said, "Look, I it's not that I don't like the guys. I like my wife better." You know, he'd been married for a year at that point. And he said, "Amy and I are 24/7. She's my best friend. She's the person I want to hang out with the most. It's not that I don't like the guys. I just like her better." And I think that's been genuine. I mean, you saw the way people reacted when Amy went through the cancer scare in 2009. This is a guy who skipped the U.S. Open, the one major he hasn't won, in 2017, to be at one of his daughter's high school graduation, who flew round trip the day before the Open started at Marion in 2013 to be at his oldest daughter's graduation, who would have skipped the playoff in 1999. If Payne Stewart misses that putt at Pinehurst in 1999 and there's a playoff, Phil wouldn't have been there because Amanda was born the next day and he was going to be there for that. And I think as he's grown older and he's changed, I think he's matured the way we hope most of us do. Zach Johnson said to me several years ago, "He's our Papa Bear. He's the guy all the young players look up to now. He's the guy who takes them under his wing, plays Tuesday money matches with them, in part to try to get him ready to play Ryder Cup in match play." And his image within the locker room is 180 degrees different than it was when he was a young player. You saw all those guys lining up to shake his hand and give him a hug when he came off 18 as he was walking to the scoring tent. That wouldn't have been the case 10 or 15 years ago.
Hmm. John Feinstein joining us this morning on the show. Have you seen the viral video of Brooks Koepka being totally annoyed at Bryson DeChambeau walking by?
I didn't see that, no. Oh. I know, but Bryson DeChambeau can be pretty damn annoying, but why am I cursing so much this morning?
Interesting.
I'm not sure.
It's interesting.
But the Golf Channel did not see the video.
Golf Channel does an interview, and it's a taped interview with Brooks. And Brooks is in the middle of an answer, and Bryson walks behind him, and he has to pause and collect himself, and then steps away from the mic and says, "I'm sorry, I can't. I bleeping hate that guy." And says, he can't even talk because of Bryson DeChambeau walking by, and then collects himself and goes back into the answer. So the outtake is now a viral video. And I was just going to ask you, what is it about DeChambeau that people on the tour just absolutely cannot stand, specifically Koepka?
It's ironic since we're talking about Mickelson. I think there is a sense among the players in the locker room that he's phony. And you see that side of him. I get along fine with him. He's never been anything but nice to me, but players don't care about that. But you see that side. When he wins the U.S. Open, and he played great, and I admire the fact that he decided to change his body type, which is a gamble. He was ranked eighth in the world at the time. But he wins the U.S. Open, and Steve Sands asks him a very legitimate question about changing his body and how difficult it was to make that decision. And he literally ignores the question and just starts listing all his sponsors. "I want to thank blah and blah and blah and blah." And players look at that and go, "Well, what is that about?" I mean, they're all into their corporate sponsors, don't get me wrong. But DeChambeau takes it to another level. There's also the pace of play issue. I mean, playing with Bryson, is like being in a dentist chair, because he pulls out either his yardage book. He pulls out his greens book when he's got a one-foot tap-in.
check out that angle.
Seriously, I mean, it's ridiculous. And again, the tour is to blame for this because they allow it. The whole pace of play issue is, I could do 20 minutes on that, but that's what it is. They just don't think the guy that goes on television and smiles for the cameras and talks about his corporate sponsors is different than the guy they see on the Ranger in the locker room. And that was the case with Phil years ago.
If you are a fan of golf, a fan of Phil, or were just kind of totally in awe of what happened over the weekend, I highly encourage you to read John's piece in the Washington Post. Phil Mickelson, a champion of comebacks and transformations, now has his greatest triumph. It's a really, really good read and a really good way to kind of summarize what happened that we saw over the weekend. John, it's always great to catch up with you and pick your brain on golf and everything in the sporting world, man. So thanks so much, and go Islanders.
Yes, thank you for that. And particularly say to Bogus, go Islanders, because I know he's suffering with this, and that gives me great pleasure.
Will do. Thanks, John.
Thanks, DA.
Okay. John Feinstein joining us this morning on the show. Bogues is a huge Ranger fan, and so it's like old times with Feinstein needling Bogus. That was the first 2 years here on CBS Sports Radio. Bogues, feels good to be back, right?
Yeah, something like that. But it's okay. The Islanders don't bother me that much. Islanders Penguins playing together is the problem, because there's no winners there. There's no one to be happy for. I wish they were playing somebody that I could actually care about, but Islanders Pens about as bad as it comes.
It's kind of bizarre that this show has been, somehow overtaken by Islanders fandom, that Upside Down Mike has become a national sensation because of the Islanders, and now we are tracking that series closer than ever than any other series. And now, I mean, Feinstein is talking about yelling in his car as well, and because the Islanders won, we've been hijacked by Islander fans at this point.
And DA, best part about this is the Islander fan we mock the most, we're not even mentioning now, thanks to Upside Down Mike.
True.
And Feinstein. Which honestly is another win for this series. So
that's
we'll
true. Yeah, the always annoying Peter Schwartz is the biggest Islanders fan that we know. We haven't even had to mention him because Upside Down Mike and John Feinstein have sucked all the oxygen out of that tank. So that's good. Less Schwartz is good for the DA show.
And Bilotti took over complaining about Mother's Day breakfast. So honestly, we got everything covered.
Working all the corners.
Yeah, that's right.
Ho, ho, ho.
Peter Schwartz.
All right, Bogues has our headlines. Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
These headlines are sponsored by Credit Karma Money. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney.
I'm Andrew Bogus.
Bogish.
Instead of being...
John has ruined me.
Packer OTAs. Aaron Rodgers was on SportsCenter last night explaining why he's unhappy in Green Bay. The Packer QB blaming the culture or lack thereof. The front office and GM Brian Gutekunst seemed to be in his crosshairs. Rodgers would not say what could make him happy again in Green Bay. Damian Lillard scored 32 first half points last night in Denver, including a postseason record tying 8 threes. So the Nuggets put the bigger Aaron Gordon on him in the second half, and Lillard scored just 10 more points. Denver won the game 128-109, a level the series at 1. Lillard will be ready if Gordon guards him in game 3.
Moving around more off the ball, you know, getting to some more off-ball sets. You know, usually bigger guys, you know, they can use their length and athleticism on the ball, but, you know, when you start to move around on flares and pin downs and things like that, you can, you know, typically get a little bit of space.
The Nuggets got 38 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists from Nikola Jokic in the win. The Bucks got 31, 13, and 6 from Giannis in their 132-98 rout of the Heat. Milwaukee now leads that series 2-0. In Utah, Jordan Clarkson wins Sixth Man of the Year over teammate Joe Ingles, and teammate Donovan Mitchell cleared to play in Game 2 with the Grizzlies tomorrow night after sitting out their opener and the last 16 regular season games with that sprained ankle. The San Diego Padres scored 3 in the ninth in Milwaukee, but needed 5. The 5-3 final ends the Pods' 9-game win streak. The Rockies improving to 3-17 on the road with a 3-2 win at the Mets, and the Marlins down the Phillies 9-6. The White Sox beat the Cardinals 5-1 in Tony La Russa's first meeting with his old team. And no hockey here, DA, because I believe Canadian bacon's next.
You got it. Having a good time. Having a good time. Coming up here next, it's Canadian bacon. Mraz whirls us around the night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, complete with bad puns. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, real good time.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save. And play is stopped.
We crave the nightly action of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
And the DA Show production team watch is on. They have assured me that coming soon is a brand new open for Canadian Bacon with the same music and most of the same clips, but just a little spiciness to freshen it up. But not today. We wait another day for it. And so here it is, Canadian Bacon. Mraz, where do we begin?
We're going to start, DA, with our soundbite of the night. The Wild were facing being stripped by Vegas in an elimination game. Those poor people of Minnesota expecting more playoff heartache. But Monday night would not be that night. They would win the game 4-2, making the road team 4-1 in this series, unbelievably. The real story, though, coming out of the game was Minnesota winning a game with 4 goals on, get this, just 14 shots. Wild head coach Dean Evason tried explaining the 14 shots post-game, but frankly, DA, he sounded a little like Shep explaining how he missed sending you the reads.
We've been doing that all series, right? We just haven't caught that. You know, we watched, I don't know how many we watched today from last game, that we were all around it. We were all around it. Just, it was close. We were, you know, hit a leg, hit a post, hit something, and it just didn't find its way into the back of the net.
Oh, that's...
I was trying to walk the dogs, and then I had a JV basketball game to go coach, and then I stayed up all night making sure that I understood all the board, and just don't know what happened there, DA. Just don't know what happened.
Yeah, if you're wondering why the Wild are still losing in this series, just think that's their head coach. Not exactly exuding a lot of confidence and trust. But the Wild survive another night.
And no specifics either. Like you said, so why is this happening? Well, I don't know. I don't know. Just things are happening. You know, if I knew, I actually don't know. I don't know what to say.
I'd have to think about that. I know we're on air, but I'd really have to analyze that a lot more.
So Vegas leads 3-2 in this series, but it goes back to Minnesota for game 6, right?
Yes, yes. So as long as Bogus could correct me, this could be a Tampa, Florida situation. Okay. I believe we're going back to Minnesota for Game 6, where hopefully that they try correct. To force a Game 7. All right, we're back. So yeah. We played the right clip here to start.
Yeah.
We're off to a good start here. All right. Now, let's go to our player of the night. Billy Joel was getting tired, and frankly, so was the East Coast, as the Islanders and Penguins went to not one, but double overtime, and they gotta have it Game 5. Back and forth we went with the game tied at 2, where finally we were told to break out the cordials and give us a shot of Bailey's.
A steal, it's Bailey, he scores! The Islanders go to Pittsburgh, they steal Game 5. They're headed back to the Coliseum with a chance to close it out.
The call, courtesy of Brendan Burke on MSG. Josh Bailey, sing us a song. You're the overtime ending man. Ilya Sorokin, Super Sorokin. The Islanders' rookie goaltender was fantastic, stopping 48 shots, a playoff rookie record for the Islander franchise. He is now 3-0 in the series. Game 6 to the Island on Wednesday night.
The DA show absolutely rots your brain. Last night when I saw this thing went to overtime and it ended, immediately I thought, who was the overtime ending man? And then I had to look up who won it in overtime. So, sing me a song, overtime ending man. The Islanders got it last night, and now they lead this series 3-2, and Upside Down Mike is loving it.
Sing us a song. You're the overtime ending man. That's right. And by the way, could you imagine? Now we go to Game 3 here, DA. A double overtime winner wasn't the goal of the night. That's because we go north of the border. The Oilers were facing elimination. The Jets, looking to soar to round 2. The game was tied at 3. We went to 1 overtime. We went to 2 overtimes. We went to a third overtime. The Oilers needing a goal. Edmonton. It was not to be. Hey, Kyle, sing us a song. You're the triple overtime ending man.
Try down along the boards here to the near side. Try to get it in. He could not. And there's a breakaway or a partial breakaway for Kyle Connor. He darts in. Let a shot go. He scores! Kyle Connor is the series hero! Winnipeg, for the third straight game, has won in overtime tonight.
That call courtesy of the Winnipeg Jets radio network. Yes, the hero of this series would not be Connor McDavid. It would not even be Connor Green. It is Kyle Connor. And the Jets, perhaps haunting my Wally Pipp Canadian bacon dreams, also had Connor Hellebuck make 37 saves. There's Connors all around. The Jets now await the winner of Toronto and Montreal in the North Division playoffs. They stand as one of the final three teams left to try and snap the country's long-standing Stanley Cup drought dating back to 1993. The Winnipeg Jets are moving on, and the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid starting to feel a lot like Mike Trout and the Angels in that era. That is your Canadian bacon.
Bogues, since Mraz got the coaching from Connor Green, I think the Canadian Bacons have really stepped it up a notch. What do you think?
I mean, certainly these last 2 days have been as good as they've been from a technical, structural, factual point, except for the one miscue yesterday. Although I do need, if we could go back to the transcript, can I get a reread of that Edmonton? I missed that one. I did not get that. Can you do that one again for me?
Okay, I'm going to do it. As I read it, it didn't sound as right as it did when I wrote it. So I will read it again to be fair, because it is my own work. The game was tied at 3. We went to 1 overtime. We went to 2 overtimes. We went to a third overtime. The Oilers needed a goal, Edmund, a ton. It was not to be. So they needed a goal. But that doesn't make any sense.
They needed, what do you mean, a ton?
Like, they needed one a lot. Like, they needed one a ton. Edmund, a ton.
That stunk.
It stunk. All right, we'll move on.
Yeah.
They needed a ton. They needed a ton of goals.
Yeah, that's why it made sense this morning, 5:15. Didn't make sense at 8:54. I'm going to put my hands up. That was not clean. That was not clean. I failed it. I botched it on the transverse trying to turn 2. Not good. But the Connor stuff I thought worked.
Connor stuff was really good. Connor stuff was really, really good. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, look, not everything's perfect. I'm not going to stand here and pout myself in the back. I thought, get the cordials. We got a shot of Bailey. was good for Josh Bailey, but I didn't even get a nice smile from anybody. So, whatever.
It was fine, but your Connor stuff was your best stuff there. And then actually, the Vegas Strip reference was your second best reference.
That
was
your second best part. One. Okay. That one I tried to go a little more subtle. All right.
Yeah, no, both me and Bogus looked at each other like, oh, okay, here we go. Yeah. We're going to start off with a solid one tonight.
So I got to be honest, I don't exude confidence off that one. I need to be better. You guys gave me more credit than I thought. I wasn't happy with the script afterwards.
What you should do is transfer your confidence in Super Sorokin, which you said like it was genius. Transfer that confidence to the strip joke, because the strip one was better than Super Sorokin.
Okay. All right. We'll work
and
on
didn't
it.
You use Super Sorokin the other last couple days ago?
And you didn't like it, so I went back to it hoping you'd like it this time.
Also, the Panthers win 4-1 over the Lightning. Lightning leads 3-2. And Toronto gets a 2-1 win over Montreal.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.